Purim is a strange holiday. I mentioned many times that I think that if we would bring potential Baalei Tshuva into Judaism just to show them Purim, they would buy in right away. And it's all the more strange because the Sifrei Kabbalah talk about Purim as the benchmark for Yom Kippur. That Yom Kippurim, Yom Kippur, is Yom, today, Kippurim. That if you succeed on Yom Kippur, you can do it. The success of Yom Kippur is to make it like Purim. And I don't think we could think of 2 days that are more contrasted than Yom Kippur and Purim. Where's the common denominator? And certainly, why is the benchmark Purim? So, a few sources that are problematic, we'll try to understand them and tie them together, and hopefully make our Purim as meaningful as it is supposed to be. So, we'll start from Mishenichnas Adar, Marbim Besimcha. Says the Gemara in Tainis, Kishem, Mishenichnas Av, Mematim Besimcha, Kach Mishenichnas Adar, Marbim Besimcha. So Kishem, somehow or other, there's a connection between the Miut Simcha of Chodesh Av and the Marbim Besimcha of Chodesh Adar. And Rashi says, what's so great about Adar, Mishenichnas Adar? Yimei Nisim Hayu Li Yisrael. So the reason for the Simcha is because it was days of miracles. It's already when you see the plural days of miracles, and then Rashi says something even stranger. The days of miracles, Purim U'Pesach. So Pesach, what does Pesach have to do with Chodesh Adar and with Purim? So that's one strange thing. When Haman threw the lottery, so it came out Chodesh Adar. And it says in the Gemara, Samach Simcha Gedoli was very happy. Adar is exactly the perfect month to annihilate the Jews, because it's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died. And the Gemara continues, V'hu lo yada, he basically missed one point. What did he miss? Hu lo yada b'yom shemes hu nolad. He missed the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was also born on the same day that he died. So let's be medayik very carefully. It doesn't say that he missed the fact that Moshe was also born in Chodesh Adar, but he missed the fact that Moshe was born and died on the same day. And the proper diuk in the Gemara is that basically, Haman was correct. He was samach simcha gedola, that it came out in Adar, the month that Moshe died. He just missed something. But if not for that little something that he missed, he would have been correct. So what is there about Chodesh Adar that actually made it an appropriate time for the Jewish people to be annihilated? Why was that appropriate? And that's going to be our connection with Chodesh Av, because Chodesh Av is a month of destruction. And somehow or other, there's a common denominator with Chodesh Adar and connected to Moshe Rabbeinu dying. But it was only the fact that Moshe was born on the same day that he died. That's what Haman missed. One of the very special things about Purim is brought in the Gemara in Shabbos, in the discussions of Matan Torah, and it quotes the pasuk Vayidyatzvu b'tachtit hahar. The Jewish people stood, sounds like under the mountain, says the Gemara. Milamet shekafa kodesh borcho aleim es ahar kegigis. God held the mountain over them like a barrel. And he says to them, "Imatem mekablim Torah mutav, if you accept the Torah, it's fine. Im lav sham tekfur askem, if not, you're going to be buried there." The offer, they couldn't refuse, so they took it. Amar Rav Yechiel bar Yaakov, "Mikan moda'a rabba la'oraisa." This turned our acceptance of the Torah into a coerced contract. And lawyers know that if the contract is signed under duress, the contract can be invalidated. And the implication here is that the Jewish people, because they were forced to accept the Torah, might be able later on to say, "We're not bound by it because we were forced." And there's a whole discussion in the exchanges between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people through the Nevi'im exactly on this point. But Amar Rava, af al pi chein. Af al pi chein, meaning the default seems to be correct. What forces us off the default that they had a moda'a rabba, they had a claim of coercion? Hadar kiblu abimei Achashverosh. They re-accepted the Torah at the time of Achashverosh. Dichsiv, and here's the proof text. Kimu v'kiblu. How is that a proof text that they re-accepted the Torah? Because the words are out of order. Kimu means they fulfilled. Kimu means they fulfilled. Kiblu means they accepted. You can't fulfill before you accept. So therefore, there has to be a different understanding of the word kimu. It can't be fulfillment, but rather kimu masha kiblu kvar. They validated. The word lekayim also can mean can validate. They validated what they accepted back at Sinai, and therefore it is now a willing acceptance rather than a coerced acceptance. And what was the motivation for that willing acceptance? Says Rashi, me avas hanes shenas Elohim. Because of the love of the miracles that God did for them. So we're talking here about the Jewish people, and there were lots of miracles that happened to the Jewish people when they left Egypt. The 10 plagues, they left Egypt. Kriyas Yamsuf, Amalek, and that didn't lead to a willing acceptance of the Torah. It required the miracle of Purim to have a kimu v'kiblu, that it was a willing acceptance. What is this? What happened on Purim that didn't happen on the whole Kriyas Yamsuf, the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole Eser Makos? Of course, the introduction to Purim we had on Shabbos, Amalek. So we spoke in the Shir on Sunday a little bit. Amalek represents the idea of mikre, coincidence, nothing matters, nothing is significant. And as when we read on Purim, Ki Yad al Keska, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu raises his hand as an oath, that Ein Shmo Shalem Ve'Ein Kiso Shalem, because it says Yad al Keska, instead of writing the throne Kisei full, and instead of writing the name of Hashem full with four letters, it only writes the Yud and then the Hey, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name cannot be complete as long as Amalek is in the world. That when Amalek, the attitude of mikra, coincidence, happenstance, whatever, the nothing God does, no miracle that God does can ever bring recognition of God, because everything can be poo-pooed away as coincidence. Purim was a miracle that was easily poo-pooed away. Because if you read the Megillah, as a journalist from outside the Megillah, it doesn't look like anything very special happened. A lot of political intrigue, a lot of coincidence. Some people were in the right place at the right time. Mordechai happened to be at the right place when he overheard the plot. And he happened to be lucky that they forgot to reward him at the time. Years later, Haman's coming to have Mordecai executed on the night that Ahasuerus happened to have insomnia. And things just unfolded in a very coincidental way, very propitious for the Jewish people. Looks like coincidence. When you see overt miracles, Yetzias Mitzrayim, 10 plagues, Kriyas Yamsuf, there is no denying God is there. And I believe that's one of the ways to understand Kafa Har Kegigis, is that they were coerced into believing in God. They were coerced to accept the Torah. You see these overt miracles, there is no choice. But when there are hidden miracles, now you have choice. Now you can choose to recognize it, or you can dismiss it with coincidence. And that's where Amalek comes into the picture, because Amalek's attitude is everything is coincidence, nothing is significant. So when the Jewish people recognized the miracle of Purim, they realized that God is there with them, operating behind the scenes, then they chose to see Him. And that leads to a much greater love than when you're forced to see Him. So the Avas HaNes that is talked about was the fact that there was hidden miracles that they were able to realize is happening. It's behind the scenes, God is playing around with the situation because He loves them. The Medrash says, I think you see, the Gemara says, Gedola Hasaras Tabat. When the king took off his ring and gave it to Haman, that had a greater effect on bringing the Jewish people back to God than the 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses in all of the Nevi'im. What did the prophets do? The prophets threatened the Jewish people, and unfortunately it happened, that if you don't keep the Torah, you're going to get smashed. And that happened. And yet, it says that what was greater to bring the Jewish people close to God was the fact that Ahasuerus took off the ring and gave it to Haman. The threat, laharog, lahashmid laharog le'abed, it's called Yehudim, somehow or other, that had a greater impact. Because they weren't forced to see God. They could have interpreted it as coincidence. When the armies are there destroying Jerusalem, you realize there's nothing to do. You better do tshuva, and if you don't, you're out. But here, it's a getter of there's no atheists in the foxholes. When you're in danger, when there's a danger, you can choose how to react. You can view it as coincidence, Amalek. Junk happens. Okay. Right? And in fact, what they did and what they could do and they did is, who did they blame for their problems? They blame Mordecai. Why did they blame Mordecai? Because Mordecai didn't bow down to Haman, and you're the cause of all the problems. So that is a very materialistic view of history. Very cause and effect view of history. It takes God out of the equation. And it took quite a few years for them to come to the realization that not only wasn't Mordecai the problem, but Mordecai was the solution. But you have to have clarity for that. To recognize that, you have to have clarity. And Amalek is the opposite of clarity. The gematria of Amalek is suffek. Everything could be like this, it could be like that. Who says? Maybe. Yeah, that's your opinion. So then there's no clarity. But what Purim gave is the clarity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. So one of the understandings then of why we're talking about the connection between Purim and Pesach is that the miracles of Pesach, they're forced upon you. And it doesn't show whether God loves you or whether he tries to control you. But when Purim comes, then you see the Avas HaNes. You see that God loves us, and it redefines how we look at the miracles of Pesach also. Amalek's attitude is live for the moment. Amalek's attitude is there is no purpose. Simcha, real simcha, comes from purpose. Years and years ago, Dennis Prager wrote an article which he eventually turned into a book called The Difference Between Fun and Happiness. We will call happiness simcha. Fun is to have fun. And, you know, he was growing up then. He was maturing in his career in Hollywood. And he was seeing all of these movie stars and the actors and the wealthy people. And every night they're going to another party. Right? And what are they looking for? Well, they wanted to be happy. But all they were doing was having fun. And the next day they were depressed. Right? When we go, there are a lot of activities that we do because we want to have fun. A movie, a ball game, a party. It's fun. But there's no connection between fun and happiness. What's the difference? Fun is for the moment. At that moment, I'm enjoying it. But there's no purpose, there's no extension. Happiness is when there's something deeper and lasting. And I think he's evolved in his thinking. Happiness is when you are living purpose. That's what makes us happy. Amalek is the antithesis of purpose. And therefore, when people live for the moment, which is most of the society today, that's why there's so much depression. Because it's the opposite of simcha. All of these things, whether it's money or whether it's the enjoyment, all of that can be used if it's used for purpose. But everything has to be focused on purpose. So that's the antithesis of Amalek. It's interesting to see that every time there is a major event, a major transformation in Jewish history, a major spiritual transformation, we always get visited by Amalek. Of course, when they were leaving Egypt on the way to Matan Torah, there's Amalek. When they're leaving the desert going into Eretz Yisrael, so they were confronted with Bilam and Balak, which the Sifrei Kabbalah say is really Amalek, because the last two letters of Balak's name and the last two letters of Bilam's name spell Amalek. There, when they're about to build the Beis HaMikdash, so who shows up? Well, Shaul is the king, and the goal is to, now we want to get ready to build the Beis HaMikdash, and Amalek shows up. That was the Haftorah. Mordechai and Esther, right before the second temple was supposed to be rebuilt, who shows up? Amalek. And today, we are in the Ikvasa de Mashiach. We're at the end of history. We're all being brought back to Eretz Yisrael. And the Mashiach is knocking on the door. And the force, the koach of Amalek, who said doubt, maybe, significance, all of that is knocking at the door. Amalek is always there to undermine our transformation into a higher level of spiritual growth. One of the things that we need, and when we talk about Amalek as Safek, so the antidote to Amalek Safek is clarity. We need clarity. And Haman comes to Achashverosh, Yeshno, Am Mefuzer Mefor, he starts castigating the Jewish people, but Chazal or Medayek, Yeshno, the word Yeshno, the root is Yashen, asleep. They're asleep from mitzvos, they're asleep from belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's the status of a person when he's asleep? Person has no clarity. Person has no thought, person has no clarity. And a lot of our lives, we walk around asleep. Because we don't have clarity, we're not looking to the future, we're not activating our intellect. Purim is a holiday to get clarity. How does that happen? Well, first thing is, Nichnas Yayin Yotza Sod. Somehow or other, wine has that ability. Again, it's a very mysterious drink. It's compared to Torah, because there's a lot of hidden things. It's the only fruit that the bracha of the juice gets an upgrade, because the hidden potential in the grape is hidden away, and we imbibe the wine to extract what's really hidden away. The real you comes out, ironically, when you're not in full control. When you're drunk, we see it over and over again, the real person comes out. There are people sitting in this room now, when they get drunk, they start just flowing with Divrei Torah, unbelievable Divrei Torah. And there are people, unfortunately, when they become drunk, they become violent, okay? They become aggressive. The real you comes out, because now there's no more inhibitions. The work on Purim is to take the materialism, the physical world, and turn it into purpose. What is Yom Kippur? On Yom Kippur we have unity. How do we have unity on Yom Kippur? Because we get rid of all the materialism, all the things that cause strife, all the things that cause machlokas, we unload them. And that creates a unity of the Jewish people. It's an unbelievable reality. But it's not a reality we can take with us the rest of the year. We live like angels one day a year. We can't take that with us. What about on Purim? Well, if you look carefully at the mitzvos, it was to counteract Yeshno Am Echad Mifuzar Umiforad. There is strife, there is machlokes, we are not unified. That was Haman's claim to Achashverosh. And that was the problem of the Jewish people. But what was the resolution? When we had the miracle, we realized that we're one nation. So there's Mishloach Manos and Matanos Levyonim. And there's a Su'uda. All of the things that bring people together. Bring people together on a social level, on an interpersonal level. Those are the mitzvos of Purim. Unity. To unite the people. That's the secret of Shalach Manos. To show a connection. So we're taking the material things that would normally cause strife, would normally cause machlokas, and the goal here is to turn it into a unifier. That is something you can take with you for the rest of the year. That's why Purim, if you do it right, if you can create that clarity of purpose, and you create the unity with other Jews, that you can take with you the whole year. That's the work. When it says, "Kol aposhet yad nosnim lo," says that it's technically in relation to tzedakah, that anybody on Purim there's a din that anybody who asks you for tzedakah, you have to give them something as opposed to the rest of the year. But on the Kabbalistic level, it says, "Kol aposhet yad," anything that you ask God for. On Purim, there's a special segula. You know, we always look for all these segulas, the chasan and the kala under the chuppah, whatever. I'm not sure that there's any validity to it. It got reversed. But on Purim, there's a segula. Whatever you daven for, you get. But you got to know what to daven for. You have to know what to ask for. That's part of the work of preparing for Purim. What do you really want? Who's the real you? And what do you really want? Let's go back to Moshe Rabbeinu, the day that the fact that he died. Why was Haman so happy? Moshe Rabbeinu brought us the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Torah for us. And when Moshe Rabbeinu dies, one could say, it's all over. It's over. And in fact, that was part of the attitude at the time of Esther and Mordechai. is that the 70-year redemption was supposed to happen. It didn't happen. Everything is finished. It's over. Adar is the last month of the year. The year is finished. When things reach an end, they're over. So what does it mean, miyom, biyom shemes, right? Vehulo yada, that Haman didn't realize that biyom shemes hu nolad. What does it mean to have been born on the same day that you died? So why are we happy? Why do we have simcha when a baby is born? The real simcha comes from potential. You start a project, potential, you're excited. Why do we have avelus when somebody dies? Because the potential's finished. Whatever they accomplish, they accomplish. Simcha, again, always looking for purpose, so there's always more I can accomplish. If I'm really focused on purpose, I'm besimcha. But when it's finished, it's over. Moshe Rabbeinu being born and dying on the same day means that he actualized his potential 100%. We usually have potential, and the sadness comes when it's over. Right? You know, you started the Zman, and you say, wow, this Zman is going to be a great Zman, and I'm going to really do. And now you're at the end of the Zman, and you look back and say, no, I really could have done more. That's a little depressing. But there's also a possibility that I finished the Zman, it's over. So when you finish a project, you can have two things. You can say it's over, finished. Or you can say, I finished this, and now this is a springboard for the next step. That's Chodesh Adar. Is Chodesh Adar the end, like Chodesh Av? The end. Chodesh Av was the end. Destruction. The destruction of the temple. Chodesh Av, the end of the year. Moshe's dead. It's all over. Or do I say, no, I finished this stage, and now I'm going to use that as a springboard for the next stage. And that's where the Jewish people were holding in Chodesh Adar. They could have said, it's all over. Thrown in the towel. Where there's a decree for us to be destroyed. It's all over. The temple wasn't rebuilt. And kishem shemishenichnas av mematim besimcha. Because there it's really the end. Kach mishenichnas Adar. We have to use Adar as not the end termination point, but the springboard to go to the next stage, to go to the next step. And that requires us to realize on our own, not with forced miracles, not with pressure. You know, in the yeshiva, there's a lot of pressure. And you do things because of social pressure, rabbinic pressure. All right? In your outside lives, you did things because of parental pressure. You're not here because of parental pressure, I'm sure. Okay, maybe the opposite. But you've got to know that the ultimate is not because kafahar kegigis. Nobody is forcing you to do anything. You have to do it because you want to do it, because you recognize a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the power of Purim, is that the miracles of Purim are hidden. And the miracles of Purim have to be seeked out. You have to find them. You have to create the relationship. That's kimu v'kiblu. That is the avas hanes. That's the realization that I'm doing it not because of coercion, but I'm doing it out of ava. And that is, ava is always connecting. And that gives Purim the capacity to be on a higher level than Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur, you can't take it with you. It's a very nice day, and you live, you show yourself, you know, I could unload my materialism. I could unload the physicality. But then you walk, but then Motzei Yom Kippur, you got to eat and you got to sleep and you got to do business. Purim is the day where, no, within the physicality, with all of the material indulgences, you can also create unity and spirituality and purpose. And that is why Purim is considered really a holiday that's always going to be with us. It's the greatest potential, but wherever there's the greatest potential, it's also the hardest work.